Season 5, Episode 20, Hammer Time. It opens up with Sipowicz being back on the force after his surgery, where he had some cancer removed from his prostate.
Prostate.
Shannon is the uniform officer who runs it down for him, Simone, and Russell, saying that a woman and her boyfriend were in an apartment. The ex-husband showed up, and the boyfriend and ex-husband got into a scuffle, and the boyfriend is shot. The woman's name is Rose Carlton, and she's sitting on the stairs. The boyfriend made no trouble, and neither did the husband when the uniform cars picked them up. When the detectives go to the woman, she's already pretty evasive and, you know, a little weird. Turns out she's probably on crack.
She's a little cracky.
Little cracktastic. Little on the crack nose. And she says that her ex-husband came in and shot her boyfriend Lonnie, and that's it. And they wanted to see the crime scene, so they go upstairs to where she is. Kyle, are you there? Because I just see that it paused.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm waiting until you get to the point where Sipowicz's pants are too tight and he's walking up the stairs like a weirdo.
I didn't even notice that he was walking up the stairs like a weirdo. He was walking up the stairs like a weirdo?
Yeah, doesn't he walk up the stairs like a weirdo? And then Simone's like, you okay, Andy?
Yeah, he walks up the stairs struggling. I don't think his pants are too tight. I think it's because he's
his got pants look a little too tight.
He's got something going on with his back, you know, his rear end.
This episode should be Sipowicz got some tight pants, because he has them all the time, this whole episode.
Maybe it's just the first time you've noticed that Sipowicz likes to wear his pants tight.
Maybe it is. Maybe because this whole episode is him putting on pants that are too tiny for him, but his own pair of pants are way too tight, and then later on, spoiler alert, he has to borrow a pair of pants from Metavoy, and those things are just as tight as the other ones, but he's bitching about how short they are. It's like, hey, I can see both your nuts split down the middle in all the pants you're wearing, but yeah, bitch said these pants are too short.
He's got a little moose knuckle going on, you're saying? I did not notice it. Well, they go into the crack den of Rose's apartment. They find a crack pipe immediately. Well, it's given to him by a uniform officer. She's claiming that Everett, her ex-husband, busted in and wrestled her boyfriend Lonnie and shot him. Sipowicz is pointing out that there's no busted-in door, so the story doesn't really add up. When Simone brings up... When Simone asks, you know, as you do in friendly conversation, you smoke crack, and she goes, what? And he pulls out a crack pipe, he's like, is this yours? And she says, I'm not taking a collar for that. It means she knows the lingo of the police department. Might be, you know...
Yeah, she's been around. She's been in and out of the police department, yeah.
She might be a repeat offender. She doesn't want to go down to the station to give a full statement. Sipowicz says, cut the guff, you're coming in. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to start using cut the guff in my regular life. And then they ask, who is the little girl in the photo? And she says, that's her daughter with her grandmother in Cleveland, and she is not involved in this. And that's the setup of the episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, and now a third voice, Papa Asher, are talking about every episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. I'm Kirk, the voice that sounds like a robot slightly is Kyle. And the voice that'll probably be a little bit lower is Papa Asher. And this is NYPD Blue Balls. Here's the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Not only lower, farther away.
In wrong direction.
Yeah, I can hold this the entire time. I can play the entire song.
Play it, it's better than your talking.
Oh, well, this has just been great. After the break, they run it down for Fancy, where Simone gets a call that there's an issue with the building that he owns, because he has a missing tenant, Edith, who we've seen in previous episodes. She's old and mean, and her and Henry Caulfield are at each other's throats constantly. Simone mentions that her rent was $135 a month, so Sipowicz says that means you're a suspect. And Simone leaves, and has his own little adventure while everybody else deals with this crackhead. Everybody is asking Sipowicz throughout this whole episode about his surgery, because they think he may have come back too soon, possibly, because it was only last week he was barely moving. Andy and Russell go to talk to the ex-husband, who was in the pokey, and he is pretty with it, it seems. He's a lot more with it than the crackhead. And they ask him about shooting at Lonnie, and he said that wasn't what happened. He came at me with a gun. It went off in the scuffle. And they said, well, according to your wife, you just came after him. And she's like, well, you can't believe that dope fiend. He came over looking for his daughter, Vanessa, who he hasn't heard from in 2 months when they used to talk every week. Rose said that Vanessa is with her grandmother in Atlanta, but he is, or not Atlanta, with her grandmother in Cleveland, but he's called Cleveland, and she doesn't know what she's talking about. And when he called the girl's school, the girl's...
Like he called the city of Cleveland?
He called the entire city of Cleveland. First he asked to talk to LeBron, and then they said, don't, no, he can't do that, he's in L.A., and then he asked about this grandmother.
LeBron was just a little gleam in his parents' eye by now. He wasn't born yet, I don't think.
He wasn't born yet to,
Oh, no, he was. He was young. He was like 5 or 6. Never mind. He wasn't the king yet.
He was the King James.
Yeah, he wasn't King James yet.
When he called Vanessa School was under the impression that she had gone to Atlanta with her father. So he was concerned and thinks that, you know, something not cool is going on. When Sipowicz asked, well, why did you leave your child with a dope fiend? He says she took like a 3-week treatment and made a good impression with the judge to get custody, and he has a little history, just a little history of domestic violence. Just a little domestic violence here and there.
Only a little bit. He only hit her once, you know?
Well, he said, I mean, I think the quote is, when I would get mad, I'd hit her. Which kind of leaves it open to interpretation. I mean, how often is he mad?
Yeah, like, when he wakes up, is he mad right away? So he just pops at one?
Just depends on his level of anger. Sipowicz and Russell go, they leave Everett back in the pokey, and they go back to Rose, who is asleep on the table, clearly coming down from her crack. They ask where Vanessa is, and she's like, oh, well, you know, Vanessa's with her grandmother. And she's like, yeah, we know, we got off the phone with her. No, she isn't. She hasn't seen her in a year. And she's like, look, my grandmother's old and crazy, so why would you leave your child with them?
I know these people are on crack, right?
Yes.
And I know that, like, I know that crack makes, fucks everything up for you. How you, how you just function and how you're just thinking and your brain and all that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, like, do they not think that, like, if they, like, say that their kid is with someone that they're not going to find out?
Yeah, it didn't really make any sense that she's like, yeah, she's with her grandmother, but don't ever check that. Like, don't
right,
check.
Like, it's very weird. Like, why would you come out with that information right away? Like, does crack just make you really honest? Like, you're lying, but then at the same time, you're trying to be as honest as you can while you're lying?
I don't know, because I've never done crack, because as I was told, crack is whack.
Okay, so let's ask Dad. When you did crack...
when you were during your big crack days...
Did you like to just give people a lot of unnecessary information?
Couldn't shut up, man.
So, yeah, she's kind of honest, kind of not, and then Sipowicz is obviously getting upset, and Rose screams out, look, I told Child Services 2 months ago that she was with her grandmother. Which is not an admission that you gave the daughter to her. That's just saying what you told other people. When they bring up that the school thinks she's Atlanta, she says, well, the school is all mixed up. And it's like, well, why would you tell the school one thing and their grandmother a different thing?
Did the detectives talk to Child Services at all? Did they even bring that up?
No, they didn't.
Didn't need to.
Didn't need to. That's a good point. Then,
didn't need to.
And then when she says the school is mixed up, I think Russell says, how come everybody is mixed up except for you? And she says, you don't believe me because I date interracial. Which, that's a weird bingo card to play right there. Look, I date black men, therefore you don't believe me.
They inject that her saying that a bunch of times in the episode. It's like, it's kind of weird.
I think in her crack brain, she's thinking, well... If I date black dudes, then anytime anybody disagrees with me, I can just say that and they'll stop talking to me. Like, no matter what the problem is.
Or maybe she's thinking that, like, by her saying, trying to turn it into this, like, race thing, they have to, like, back off of her and leave her alone. like, in her little crack brain, she thinks, like, oh, if I bring up, like, that I'm dating a black guy and that you're being mean to me or, like, looking at me differently, you'll leave me alone. But she's, like, not missing the whole point that, like, someone got shot.
Yeah, like we're going to investigate what's going on, and if something doesn't make sense, we're going to ask about it.
Yeah, and then now, like, they can't find your daughter. So, you know, these are, like, important things we got to figure out.
I feel like if she walked into a store without a mask on and they were like, you got to put on a mask, she's like, you're just saying that because I date interracial.
You're just saying that because I date black guys.
So then, with a pause, Sipowicz says, is your daughter dead? Which she responds, who said that? Which is not how you respond when someone asks that question.
Yeah.
Because if anybody asks me, hey, is your brother dead? And I said who? And I say, who says that? It almost is like I'm worried someone talked about what I know about what happened. Sipowicz then says, did you kill her? And she starts crying and says, I would never kill that child or hurt that child. And Russell demands, prove that she's alive. When Sipowicz threatens and then says, what kind of woman are you? What kind of mother are you? She noticed that Sipowicz has pissed himself.
Okay, hold it right there.
Okay, we're holding.
This is going to be interesting.
Well, having had to deal with similar problems.
Similar problems with what, Dad?
With your prostate.
Prostate problems.
You don't just piss your pants. Now, that's not to say that... I guess what I'm saying is, you know it's coming. He acted all surprised, like all of a sudden, oh man, I pissed my pants. What was going on for me was you feel the feeling and you didn't have very long to get to the bathroom, but you knew you were going to pee.
Mm-hmm.
In this thing, he just pees on himself. Now, I haven't had the operation that he had, but in my experience, you at least had the sensation of having to go at least for a second or two. Which explains why I ended up pissing behind a garbage can in a mini mall so I wasn't pissing my pants in my car.
What?
In a trash can behind a mini mall.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to piss
in my pants. And no way does Sipowicz and Medavoy have the same waist.
Yeah, Dad was pissed when that shit...
No way.
Definitely not season 5 Medavoy. Medavoy does gain some weight by the end of the show that I could definitely see them sharing pants, but no, not right now.
When Sipowicz pisses his pants, he runs out of the room. Russell tells the woman to shut up about it. He tells her to shut up about it before leaving. He demands to see the cell phone cuz they have one cell phone, which is kind of funny. Then he runs into the bathroom and calls someone, we assume is Sylvia, and says, I need more pants. Which is a hilarious thing to say. I need more pants. When he gets off the phone, Medavoy sheepishly sneaks into the bathroom and offers some pants, to which Dad immediately was like, there's no way they're the same size.
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't think they're the same waist. Definitely, I mean, we see that they're definitely not the same height, but they're definitely not the same waist.
Well, they make a joke of the fact that they're really high on him, like he's getting ready for a flood. They do make the joke, or they make the line where Medavoy's like, I think we're ballpark in the waist, but I can't guarantee the length. But, I mean, I thought, too, was there's no way they fit him. I figured they'd do that thing, which I don't know if you guys have done this, but I have, where your pants suddenly don't fit, maybe because you had a big lunch. So you unbutton, but then cover up the button with your belt, so it looks like it's buttoned, but you really just put the belt around your buttons. Nobody? Okay, well, just me. I figured that's what he would...
Sorry, I have no first-hand experience with being white trash, Kirk.
Well, that's just because you take your pants off immediately when you enter a room. You don't wear pants unless someone is forcing you to.
Very true. Very true. It's in the 40s and I'm still wearing shorts, so... Get at me.
When Sipowicz ran out of the room, Rose demanded that I want a lawyer for the information on how she died. And when Sipowicz comes back with Metavoy's pants, Cohen lets him know that she wants immunity for all the information on her daughter's death and what happened to the remains. Fancy asks if that she can get less than full immunity, which I thought was important because Cohen did say, "I'll let her be queen for a day." Which I think is important because I think he said from the beginning he doesn't plan on giving her the full immunity. She'll be safe. But Sipowicz thinks that she did. We also got Max here on the show. That's the jingle jangle, and he also loves NYPD Blue. Oh, as Cohen walks away from the conversation, he notices that Sipowicz's pants are too high up.
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, they're just as tight as his other pants were, too.
Kyle, I did not realize that when Dad was upset that there's no way the pants would fit, Kyle was upset because the pants are too tight.
Always too tight.
Maybe he felt like he had to hold in that stitching, because when he puts on, when he takes off the pants, you see his really big scar on his stomach for the surgery. Continuing with that story, she gets immunity after saying that what happened was she came home to see her boyfriend Lonnie hitting her daughter in the head with a hammer through tears. Both Sipowicz and Russell seem suspicious of this testimony. They don't think it's real. I believe Russell asked why, and she said because she used to wet herself, and she had done it on the couch, and Lonnie was pissed. And when Sipowicz said, "When you got a chance to be alone, you didn't call the police," and she said, "No, I know if I had done that, Lonnie would have killed me too." But they still don't believe her. When they get out of that testimony, Sipowicz eyes Sylvia, and then very obviously and suspiciously does a pants handoff in the bathroom. Because the way he looks at her, and then looks at the bathroom, and then looks at Russell, and looks at the bathroom, it's like, yeah, obviously something's going to happen in the bathroom.
Oh, everyone, well, I mean, like, everyone knew he had to get pants. Everyone, like, they could all tell he wasn't wearing the same pants he came in with, and pants that fit him correctly.
They knew it was pants-related. They knew it was a pants situation that needed to be resolved.
100%. Yeah, there's a pants stitch going on.
And it looks like he's about to bust a pants stitch because they're way too tight. Yeah, you're welcome. Sipowicz and Sylvia lock the bathroom as they change his pants, showing that he's not doing very well, and she even asks him, "Did you return too quickly?" To which he responds, "No," twice.
Which the answer is yes.
Yeah, he obviously did. But, I mean, Sipowicz cares about, like, two things. His family and work. And not drinking again, I guess. Three things. He also says he'll take the pants to the cleaners. I think he feels responsible for the whole ordeal, so he wants to do it himself. And he also bags on Cohen for giving that woman immunity, to which Sylvia said, "I would have done the same thing." But it's almost like he's not even listening to her say that.
Yeah, but then, okay, finish it up.
Well, I was going to go to when they talked to Lonnie after that.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, so they go to talk to Lonnie, and they're obviously very aggressive because they've just been told he murdered a child. And that's a famous face played by Terrence Howard of the TV show Power, the movie Hustle and Flow. And
Pimps and Hoes.
And he was the original War Machine before Don Cheadle got in there.
Original War Machine, until he thought War Machine was as popular as Iron Man.
Yeah, he thought he could negotiate over Robert Downey Jr., who basically created a franchise. Not too good for him. He mentions that he's, because he got shot in the right arm, he's not a lefty, so they may not be able to read his statement. And they come in hot, and Sipowicz says, "You worry about keeping yourself healthy in this hostile environment," which got a laugh out of Dad and myself.
He has some pretty good quips, man.
When he then says he's going to bring the whole damn toolbox, not just the hammer, he realizes that they know what happened to her, so he explains that he was only trying to help and that she was going to die. He just ended her suffering and misery, because Vanessa's mother, Rose, was just trying to drown and hit her with a hammer in the tub. Because it turns out when you smoke crack, it's hard to murder someone because you're not thinking straight.
Well, good. The next time I need to murder someone, I'll smoke some crack first and see if that helps me out.
And he says the only thing he did was took her head out of the water so the hammer would actually make contact. And then just Sipowicz demands that he writes it, and he shouts at him, "Write." And then secretly whispers, "She got immunity," and then rubs his head. Continuing that story, they pick up Rose's sister, and they talk to Cohen and Fancy in Cohen's office. Or not, Randy's out. Randy is not a name of any character in this show, so I don't know where I got it.
No, I think it's only been, like, some, like, small character named Randy.
They're talking in Fancy's office, and Cohen reminds them that they cannot use anything from Rose's testimony because of the immunity agreement to charge her with the crime. As Sipowicz is walking out, Cohen says, "Does Russell understand that?" And Sipowicz says, "You probably don't want to use that tone with me." Because he's pissed at Cohen for granting her immunity. As he walks away, Cohen reiterates to Fancy, to which Fancy just says, "Wow." Now, I understand, like, this, it doesn't matter, it's splitting hairs. Was he wowing the fact that he can't believe Cohen is that much of a dick? Or was he wowing the fact that Cohen thinks he needs to reiterate that to his workers because they're that good?
No, because, so, I think it's the statement that he makes, because he says something like, you know, if they go in there and they say blah, 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 when they're not supposed to say it, and blah, 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 it could totally screw everything up. And then Fancy goes, "Wow." I think he's doing it to be like, just to be sarcastic to him and dismissive to him, like, I think it's more of a thing, it's more of a them going to him like, "We know it because you put us in this fucked up situation." And so they're all acting like dicks to him.
Yeah, it's just a pile on Cohen.
Andy knows what he can and can't say because you gave this dummy immunity. Like, so they know what situation that you've put them in and they're going to deal with it. Like, you don't have to keep emphasizing your fuck up to them. They understand it.
They're just upset that now they have to do, it's harder to do their job when it would be a much easier situation.
Exactly. And they're upset that this woman is been given immunity, because Cohen had no idea who she, like, what she really was, like they did. So they're just annoyed with him.
Sipowicz joins Russell and Rose's sister Sandra in an interrogation room. They're evading with anything that Rose said, so they can only talk about how there was an argument at their apartment and somebody was shot, and that it occurred because the ex-husband wanted to see the daughter, who hasn't been seen for a while. So they can't really use any testimony from, I think, the boyfriend, but they can use it from the husband. It's clear that the sister doesn't really know anything, and they aren't very close. They have to pull out the information that she let her sister borrow her car. And then after Sipowicz gets very aggressive and makes her cry, she mentions, "Oh yeah, she also got a ticket in the car," which I honestly, like, I don't know if they just needed to extend the scene. Wouldn't you have brought that up immediately? "Hey, we need information on your sister. Well, she borrowed my car and got a ticket." Like, isn't that, like, something you immediately say?
Not if you don't trust
the cops. I mean, like,
not if you don't trust the cops.
If you were a crackhead and you were going to get in trouble, would you want me to rat you out?
Right. Good point. Excellent point.
Well, thanks. No, I well, that's
like if you were going through something, they pulled me into the police pulled me in, and they were like, "Hey, we need information on your brother." I would be like, "For what? Why? Like, what's going on? You're not just going to ask, like, I'm not just going to tell you everything. Like, what's happening?"
Snitches get stitches, according to Dad. Well, because my thinking is this. She said, because she mentions that she...
Rose before hose.
She mentions that her sister Rose does crack, that they're half-sisters, that they barely talk, that she doesn't really have much to do with her because her sister accuses her of being racially bigoted, which I kind of wish I saw one of those conversations where it's like, "Hey, you should stop..."
I forgot they were half-sisters. Then, yeah, she should have just said it right away.
you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have a relationship with her. So
I'm agreeing with you, because I forgot that... I watched this 2 days ago. I forgot that she goes on this whole rant about how they're not really sisters. Like, they're half-sisters. They barely know each other. She does crack, blah, 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 all this shit. I forgot she went on that rant. Yeah, she should have told them right away, then.
I also love the idea that she says, "We don't talk because it's a fight. Every time we talk, she says I'm racially bigoted," which I'm not racially bigoted. And it's like, does that mean she has a conversation that goes like, "Hey, Rose, you should really stop doing crack," and then she goes, "You're just angry because I date black guys."
Yeah, because she said it to the cops in the 100%. Beginning, too.
But it's like, what type of conversation is that?
That's Rose's go-to.
they get this, they basically drag this information out of her that her sister borrowed the car. She brought it back with no gas, which is a crime right there. But she also said that she got a ticket. So the next scene is one of those no spoken audio, just music finding a body montages.
In the park, yeah.
Where
Sipowicz just has a scowl on his face, and it goes from regular scowl to like a bulldog when he sees the body.
And because there was a lot of wind, it's blowing his comb over hair all over the joint. And, you know, he does that thing where he stares off into the distance like, yep, they definitely murdered a child, which I suspected. And the next scene, they bring Rose into Fancy's office with Sylvia, as well as Cohen, her legal aide, Fancy, Sipowicz, and Russell. Sylvia goes in real hard.
Cohen's all quiet. Cohen's all, like, he's, like, in the corner, like, he's in detention.
And Sylvia basically says, the immunity agreement doesn't matter if your client's a liar. She tries to bite back Rose, but Sylvia goes in harder, and she says at one point, who died and made you pope? Which I thought was hilarious, because there's never going to be a woman pope.
I just think it's hilarious that we give the pope some kind of standing.
Well, yeah. He was elected by a bunch of other priests to be the voice of God for some reason.
So here's my issue with the whole Sylvia thing.
Uh-oh.
Maybe I misunderstood her speech.
Do not go on.
Or misunderstood her little, like, talk in the room. But I felt at one point she kind of belittles the fact that Cohen gave her immunity.
Yeah, which she does.
I don't remember exactly what she says, but it's the way she says it about, and the terms of this immunity agreement, as laughable as they should be from the beginning, or something like that. Yet, scenes before, she had no problem telling Andy that she thought Cohen did the right thing. So what is it?
Well,
is it Cohen did the right thing without you knowing all the information? Or is it now that you know all the information, it's the wrong thing? Like, where were you wrong?
Well,
that's what bugged me about the whole thing with her.
She mentions at the end of the episode when her and Sipowicz are just kind of, you know, cuddling. She mentions that she only did that to come down harder on Rose to make her think she has no way out.
I missed that part.
Yeah, she says, like, because even Andy, to cut to the end, she tells Andy, you were too hard on Leo because I would have made the same thing he did. I only came down on him so hard to intimidate that woman. And Sipowicz says, oh, it's another form of prosecutorial deception. But when she comes down on her super hard, she basically says, let's tell her what she's got before she keeps talking. And Fancy lets her know about the moving violation and that they found a cadaver 75 yards from it, which means, did she, like, drop the body, cover the dirt, and then speed away from that location? Because 75 yards is not close. I mean, not far.
Maybe she was speeding to the location.
And then after getting the ticket, was like, oh, I'll just drop it here.
No, maybe she'd always planned to drop it. She just driving there fast, got stopped.
Because when he said it was like 75 yards from the location, it's like, one, she's definitely on crack, because that's a terrible decision. Once you get
Was it a speeding ticket, or was it a parking ticket?
They just say it's a moving violation, so I assume so speeding.
Probably not parking if it's a moving violation.
I don't remember what they said.
All depending on how you park.
It was an anti-moving violation. Then, they mentioned that Lonnie has more details about what happened, and she's like, Lonnie doesn't know what day it is. And they're like, yeah, he remembers because he couldn't even sleep in the room with the child's remains. And then they said, now we have a witness that puts you near where the body was. And she's like, what witness? And Sipowicz says, the cop that gave you the ticket, you moron. Sylvius mentioned, like, the legal aid tries to fight back, to which Sylvia says, I'm dying to get you into a courtroom where you have to defend this immunity agreement that doesn't provide any truth. And then the woman, you know, just drops a racial slur, as you do in a room full of ethnically diverse people.
Well, I mean, you know, because people are racially bigoted, because she dates blacks, you know?
Look, she's into black dudes, but that doesn't mean anything about anybody else.
Yeah, she's into black, but, you know, when they turn brown, she's not about it.
When they turn brown. You know, when the stork is making them and turning them different colors?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's how it's done, right?
Well, after she insults that dude with a racial slur, she asks him, well, what are they offering me now? Which was hilarious, because why would he ever want to help you again? They say 5 years in prison with treatment, and she asks, well, how about no treatment? Which, that's pretty bold, to just say, give me more prison time, but no treatment. Because she just loves that crack.
Yeah, but she's not going to get as much crack in prison, you know what I mean?
Yeah, crack is hard to come by.
Like, if she's really about it, what she should say is, what she should have done has been like, alright, fine, I'll take the treatment in prison. Fake it through the treatment, get the shorter prison time, get out, and she can do crack quicker. You know what I mean?
Yeah, surprisingly, the crackhead really isn't thinking about how to economically get more crack in their body. Their whole case kind of ends with Sipowicz talking to Everett, who's in holding, letting him know that his daughter Vanessa is dead.
And he's not that broken up about it.
Well, he does say, please help me, Jesus. And I think, is that the reason Sipowicz even asks if he's church-affiliated? Because he says, please help me, Jesus?
Here's a question I had.
Uh-oh.
For Kirk.
Oh, God.
Could or would Sipowicz be so empathetic if he was racist towards a black guy?
Yes, because I don't think Sipowicz is thinking about... I think all Sipowicz is thinking about is getting the kid, because he has a soft spot for children. I think all he's worried about is getting the child taken care of, and he feels for the man because he lost his child. You can still feel for somebody because they lost a child and still hate them because of their skin color. Or still think that you are better somehow because of your skin color. So just because he's trying to help this person bury the child doesn't mean that he still has ill will towards them because that he's a black man.
So in that conversation, what you got out of it was he's just trying to help bury this child, not he feels bad for this guy.
Yes, he feels
bad. How can you feel bad for the guy if you're a racist? If you're
a
racist, that means you hate
him,
right?
As a black father. He feels bad for him as a father, knowing what he feels like because they both lost children.
So he's a situational racist.
No. He's still racist in that moment. He's still a racist.
He showed no racist tendencies in that conversation at all.
He's just looking at that man differently. Instead of his race, he's looking at him as a father, which he should by most people. He shouldn't look at most people because of their color. He should look at them because of the things that they go through.
Right, he should, but you and your brother have both made the case that he's a drop-dead racist, yet here he is, feeling sympathy for a black guy.
Well, I don't understand. Well, now we're going to have a longer conversation, because I don't understand the term drop-dead racist.
That's what he is, period.
There's no, like, levels of it.
He's a period racist.
It's a guy. It's a guy who's racist, but really loves the movie Drop-Dead Fred.
You're an idiot, Kirk.
Well, my point is, we got about 20 minutes left of this recording, and if we want to pursue this, I'll just leave, because there's definitely no way we're going to get the episode done if we're going to argue.
We can just agree that I'm right and keep going.
Oh, dear God. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Kyle and I have debated endlessly whether Sipowicz is straight-up racist, or if he has some racial prejudice.
Yeah.
Kyle would say the man is straight racist, and that he gets better slightly over the different seasons.
Well, to be honest, I think I'm the one that brought prejudice into the conversation.
Because I didn't used to use the word prejudice. I said he was straight racist.
Right,
too.
And I had to explain to you the difference.
But
now, remember when? Let's go back. Remember
oh,
when?
God damn it!
Remember when he first became president?
Uh-huh.
And they had and the people were carrying the torches.
The tiki torches, yeah.
Right, and he said there's good people on both sides.
Yes.
Right? And then people ended up getting killed or hurt.
Mm-hmm.
None of those people felt bad for the people that got killed or hurt. They did not show empathy towards them. That's what they wanted. But here's Sipowicz feeling badly for this father, who happens to be black. That's not prejudice.
But there were some people who may not necessarily have been at that march, who still were backing Trump and still... backing what the Proud Boys were doing there, when all
right,
of that
but
happened,
all that means
may have stepped back and been like, "Man, I feel horrible. Like, I never wanted any of this to happen, and I didn't want that woman to lose her life by getting run over. Like, this is not what I want it to be." like, this never should have happened. And some people did feel that way. And then 2 weeks went by, and they went right back to supporting Trump and supporting the Proud Boys and supporting racism. So that still makes you a racist. Because you're able to stop for, like, a day or two, or, like, for Sipowicz's case, for an hour, and be able to empathize with someone, doesn't mean you stop being racist.
No, dude, no. Not wanting to kill somebody and feeling genuinely bad for somebody are clearly two different things.
Yes, but yes,
there can
yes,
be many reasons people, for not wanting to kill somebody.
The people who saw the news and saw that girl get run over genuinely felt bad for that girl's parents.
Right, but the people that were there did not feel that way.
Felt bad for all of them and empathized. But the thing is what we're arguing is a moot point anyways, because it was a white woman who got killed. So there's no racial implication involved in this.
Well, you're the one that brought it up.
They did. No, you did.
No, you
brought
did.
Up the thing down there.
You I said it hurt. And shit. Then you talked about the woman that got run over by the car who was white.
That's why this doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
There are tons of people. You know them as well. If I need to say their names and we can X them out, we can. Like, just because Sipowicz took the time to care about this man, which, I mean, it doesn't matter what his skin color, he should care about what's happening to someone in this situation, doesn't mean he stops holding this racist ideal that he's still better than him because of his skin color. That doesn't stop going away. Now, like, sure, maybe Sipowicz gets better at it and he works at it, but those things don't go away. Like, we've seen that throughout our whole lives with people that we know pretty well.
Yeah, but then that would say that empathy wasn't genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're going to pretend that you're caring about somebody, and as soon as they leave, you say something about them, that empathy was not genuine. But I don't believe that Sipowicz's empathy that was shown in this episode was
fair
fake.
Enough. That's very true. I think in this moment there is genuine empathy from Sipowicz, 100%. You are right on that. He genuinely cares about this man and what this man is going through with his daughter and what, like, has happened and what this man has to deal with. But if it was 2.5 months later and this man was, like, beating on a white woman, let's see if Sipowicz still feels that empathy that man was going through. Let's see if Sipowicz had to deal with, let's say this man got drunk at a bar and was being loud and obnoxious. Sipowicz came up and he was like, oh, well, and he started like talking shit about Sipowicz. Let's see if Sipowicz still has that same empathy or if he's still looking at him from a different view. That's all. Like, we don't know that. We just have to go off of this situation. But, like, just because you can stop for an hour and show empathy to someone doesn't mean your racism stops either. Maybe it stopped for that hour. Maybe for that hour, maybe that's a glimpse into an hour of Sipowicz's life where he's not racist, where he actually, like, he's doing something that's making him think, like, oh, I, like, these, like, we're all equal, we're all the same, we all go through the same shit. Maybe that's the hour we get to see, but it doesn't stop, because, like, we see through other episodes that he still is a racist.
Can I put a button on this? Mostly because we have, like, 15 minutes to go over Simone's case. Because Sipowicz has changed a lot throughout the show to even get to this point. Getting Simone as a partner, having that experience with Kwasi, having moments where his racism is challenged, he has changed a little bit. Because even comedians talk about what is racist and what is not. They talk about context and how the context of a comedy club is different than the context of a hate pride, like a hate rally. Sipowicz, at the beginning of this episode, is told two black dudes were involved in an argument and one of them got shot. And the white woman is the former wife and now current girlfriend of the other. It turns into the story of the woman trying to pin the murder of her child onto one of these black gentlemen while trying to get the other guy fucked over for an attempted murder when all he did was try to figure out what was happening to his daughter. He is seeing a perfect example of how his thinking is completely false. While one of those black characters is a crackhead, he couldn't even stay in the same room as the remains of the child that his girlfriend murdered because of how horrible that was, but that he's still smoking crack. He still has that problem. Meanwhile, you have this other black gentleman who came down or came up from Atlanta just to figure out what happened to his daughter, gets involved in this situation and almost gets an attempted murder charge because of what his ex-wife said. So when he went down to talk to Everett, he's going, okay, this guy is going to experience something I experienced, finding out that his child is dead. Of course, he doesn't have the unfortunate situation of pulling back the curtain to see his dead child on a gurney. I'm going to go tell this man the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And he almost got completely fucked over by this other person. He doesn't see him as a black man at that point. He doesn't even think about those racial prejudices. He's thinking, oh my god, I have to do this for this man, because even I thought...
See, to me...
What happened to him was garbage.
If you're a racist, it's baked in. You always see through a racist lens.
Which, that's why I don't think Sipowicz is, quote-unquote, drop-dead racist. I think Sipowicz is dealing with his bigotry and his racism and his prejudices every day, like an addict does, and he is trying to get better.
Sorry, you also have to look at the world that we live in now, and you have to also look at that, like, we all thought that racism wasn't gone, but we all thought that it was, you know, it was a dying light that we were fighting in America until Trump came around. And then a lot of people who, you know, you never thought had these thoughts and feelings now felt a little bit more comfortable saying what they felt, and guess what? A lot more people ended up being racist. And a lot more people ended up voting for someone who was okay with racism, which means you're complicit, which means you are racist. So what we're seeing is that there's tons of people that are racist, they just were really good at hiding it. They were really good at knowing that this isn't a social norm that we can put out there, so let me just hide it to get through my life, but when I'm back home and I'm comfortable, these are the thoughts I'm going to have. And so it's super easy for Sipowicz to bounce back and forth through his racism, do that, especially being a cop. If anything, he has been trained to be able to just deal with situations quickly and be able to figure things out. And then on top of that, sometimes his racism comes in when it's certain, when it's more certain situations than others. When there's drugs involved and robbery immediately with people of color, he's all like, all in their face, blah, 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 all this, all that. But he still is able to like deal with their parents.
I just think that we all three of us represent a different moment, or a different part of the Sipowicz's racist spectrum. I think Dad is kind of on the edge of, if he was racist, he would be like shooting black people in the street and saying there's no problem and getting off without any problems at all. I'm saying...
But you have to remember, he did that. Like, he's done that in his young age. He did that in the beginning when he was a cop. And then it became taboo to do, so you had to hide certain things.
Kyle, and like I said, the spectrum Kyle is on is the other end, which is he's basically just took off his hood from the Klan rally. And I'm in the middle of, we are watching a character slowly learning that he can't just stop those tendencies, and he can't just like sand down the edges of his racism. He has to actually challenge why he has those thoughts and feelings. And that's what the show kind of turns into once they realize they couldn't keep a main character around, i.e. Whisper Tough and Simone. So it had to become about Sipowicz's growth as a person. And that's why I'm a little more hesitant to go to he's completely racist, but I understand Kyle's point of view. As well as Dad's point of view. I just think that it's also hard to do because of the certain times we are in and how charged even that discussion can get. As was proven now, we have very little time to talk about Simone's story, which is very quick. The situation that Simone is in is that, because he has a building now that he got from a woman that I believe was related to his ex-wife, that's over in Brooklyn. And one of his tenants is missing, and it's the tenant that has extreme rent control, so her rent was $135 a month, which, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, well, that sounds like the coolest thing ever. When he goes down there, we run into Savino, which is a reoccurring character on the show, Detective Savino. He's a cool dude. He has the nephew of Edith filling out a missing persons report, because he hasn't spoken to her in 3 days, And he is pointing at Henry Caulfield as the one who probably caused her harm. Jerry Murphy is the nephew, says he is in regular contact with Edith, but every time he calls her, Henry picks up the phone, Henry's always involved, Henry makes comments about moving her out while they're on the phone, and he seems very aggressive. Simone is trying to get more information on him, and it just seems like a concerned nephew at this point, and he keeps hitting his head on like a little plastic bin, which I think was played for laughs, but I just kept thinking that's gotta hurt. When they leave the conversation with Jerry, Savino mentions that Henry Caulfield has been making threats. He was even flipping off the dude while in that room, just a few feet away from Jerry. And then Simone says he doesn't think that he has murder in him, but he'll talk to him. When he talks to Henry, he's a bit of a dick, like he is always. Claims he hasn't seen her in 3 days either, that she wouldn't answer the door, and he wasn't going to call her if she wasn't going to answer the door. And he wasn't going to use his key to come into the room because she forbade him doing so. And then he complains about deadbeat Jerry Murphy. At one point, he just straight up asked Simone, "Do you think I did this?" And Simone just hilariously said, "I don't know, she's missing, and you've told people that you want to kill her." He says that he was looking through her windows, trying to see if she was okay, and then Simone just calls him an idiot as he leaves. Also wanted to mention, Naomi Reynolds shows back up, who we've talked about. She's a crazy person from Australia, pretending to be from the South, so she could be a police officer. Apparently it's just the, "Hey, have you been a PA? Come by the office week."
Come by and say hey.
Dolores is like, "Oh, that's crazy. Some gay guy who now works in computer graphics did the same thing." And I was like, that some gay guy is named John Irving. He's the best PA on the fucking show, so show some respect. It ends with Naomi writing down a nice message to Simone because she wanted to let him know and show him that she got the uniform and she is a police officer, which was her lifelong dream.
How did she get on the force?
Apparently, the requirements aren't that steep because she lied on immigration forms and she lied on tons of federal shit. So I don't know how, but she got it.
She got caught being illegal and got kicked out of her apartment, correct?
Yep.
But she could get a job with the NYPD?
I guess so. I guess they assumed there'd be less harassment claims if it was an Australian woman who is being threatened of eviction. Or, what's the word? Deportation, not just eviction. Simone and Savino talk to the tenants, who are kind of like stereotypical New York a-holes. One of them's just complaining about the building and saying that Henry... And they're all saying that Henry was going to try and kill Edith after he got part ownership with Simone. Said that he was going to poison her milk. He was going to shoot at her through the window because he found a perfect spot and he got a lawn chair up there. And then one woman said that he was going to chop her up into little pieces and bury her on a farm upstate. And after they get this info, as they walk out, that same woman gives Simone a wink because she wants some of that Simone in her life.
Do you think it's hard for Simone to walk around?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's just getting women throwing themselves at him.
They're all trying to hit it.
They're all trying to hit that Simone D.
And not quit it.
The next scene, Simone talks to Henry again, and he's upset. The first thing that's said is Henry goes, "It's just talk, Simone." And for a couple of watches, I assumed he was saying, like, "Just talk to me, Simone." I was like, "Don't be a dick. He's trying to help you." But he was actually just saying, "It's talk," what the people in the building are saying. Simone says, "Well, I think
Henry Caulfield, this character, he's like, it's like he's cracked, he's like on cocaine the whole episode. He's like so skittish and like jittery."
Well, he also says that Simone's like, "I saw the chair on the roof with the line of sight to her room," and he says, "I go up there to smoke reefer." Funny thing to admit in a police station.
Well, it's better than saying, "I go up there to spy on someone that I'm going to shoot."
Good point. One is worse less than the other. He leaves Henry, and Henry's like, "Well, can you put in a good word for me to Savino?" Because he says that Savino decides whether or not he's still held. And he doesn't even say anything. He just walks out, and Savino lets him know that Edith's body was found with her ID. And they both say... to each other. You only find a body with an ID when the person wants people to know that that person is dead. So the next scene they have is with Jerry at Simone's stomping grounds, because those were in the Brooklyn house. They bring Jerry over to the 15th precinct to talk to Simone. And Simone lays down some false shit, saying that they found someone who looks like Edith in Binghamton. And that at some point, Edith wrote up a new will where Henry Caulfield is the beneficiary. And Jerry freaks out, saying that he has stuff dated from 4 days ago, saying he gets it. Once he gets more belligerent and his story gets less, you know, believable, Savino comes out of a side room and they let him know that Edith is dead, and they have some witnesses saying that he did the dumping. And then he apologizes for not being a murderer or not knowing that homeless guys were going to watch him dump the body. Which, I mean, it's nice for him to apologize. Simone goes into the coffee room where Henry is, and they had him just in case as a confidence. If the guy didn't believe the will story, Henry could come out and say, yeah, she gave it to me, bro. Henry has a little moment where he's upset because he, you know, he treated her poorly, but he also said that he was going to murder her, which he regrets. Henry said that he only said those things because that's what he thought building owners did. They would get high and tell their other tenants that they were going to murder a different tenant. To which I said, those people who said, oh yeah, Henry mentioned he was going to murder her, if they knew he was high, or had any inkling that he was high, why would they believe him?
Yeah, and wouldn't they have said that? Like, hey, he was like smoking a lot of weed and he was talking a lot of shit.
Because I would imagine if a dude who looks like Henry Caulfield was high, telling me like, oh yeah, I'm going to murder Edith, I'd be like, yeah, sure you are, dude. As soon as you get done with your Cocoa Puffs and taking a nap.
And like the little they know about Henry already, like, nothing about him screams like he's going to hurt anybody.
He's just going to bitch and moan.
That's all he does.
He mentions that he thinks that him being an asshole to Edith was good because she didn't have to feel bad about being an asshole to him, because she was basically an asshole to everybody. And then he has, you know, a moment where he says, I'm not a kid anymore, Simone. If you can't be kind to the people you feel kindness toward, you're no damn good. And Simone responds with, the way I look at that, Henry, if we're still drawing breath, we got a chance to do something on our shortcomings besides piss and moan. And I thought that was a very good written exchange that I had to repeat. He then makes sure that Henry's going to take care of Edith's arrangements. And then for the first time ever, Henry says thank you, which takes Simone by surprise. Because he's always been kind of an asshole. And of course, the credits, or the end of the show I mentioned, Sipowicz and Sylvia cuddling together. And besides Sipowicz and Sylvia going over the case, he then says thank you for everything else, which of course refers to the pants debacle.
The pants situation, yeah.
And then they share kind of a closer cuddle, and we have the credits. We kind of had to burn through the end of it. Is there anything either of you guys would like to say about the episode, besides, you know, argue about whether Sipowicz is racist or not?
No.
No, I just think we picked a bad example to try to prove Sipowicz wasn't racist.
Oh, God, this is going to be a fun conversation later, I can already tell. I just want to say, the only way it gets better is with through clear communication where we listen to each other. And I would say that Dad has a point that a completely racist, I hate black person man would see the situation, oh, someone has to go tell that dude his daughter's dead. He'd go, okay, somebody else do it, I don't care. Or he would have less empathy to what that guy's going through and would offer no help, which Sipowicz did offer help if he didn't have money. However, Kyle does have a point that Sipowicz has made comments and actions in the past, which show that he hasn't learned a lot since the changes of society in terms of racism. But I believe he is growing and changing, and hopefully by the end of the whole show, it'll at least show him in a better light than where we were, because growth is better than nothing. That's all I'll say on the situation. And with that wonderful ending, Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. I will say, I checked Stitcher. Something very fucking weird is going on. So if you go to the Asher Brothers Podcast site, or side of it, you'll see all the episodes of NYPD Blue Balls and Asher Brothers Podcast. I don't know what's happening. I find it way too hard to try and deal with Stitcher, but it's on there somewhere. We're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. And every episode is still every other Tuesday, and NYPD Blue is still on Hulu. Have a good one. I've been Kirk. The robot's been Kyle. Papa Asher is here with Max, the dog.
He's too far away.
Have a good one, everybody. Peace. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. I want to take a moment to apologize for all of the clicks, bangs, whistles, and jingles. There was a lot going on when trying to record everybody in one room, including the dog. We get a lot of stuff happening. I apologize. With that said, hey, if you want to rate and review and say that we're terrible, please rate and review the show. It's how this podcast gets seen. And if you hate it, hey, I don't care. Yell about it all you want. If you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, there is True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There's What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles written about the show. And then there's, of course, Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, a little more serious version of what we do here, going through the entire series. As of right now, the show is on Hulu, every single season of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. It is on DVDs. I think they're more accessible in America, but if you can get Hulu, it is available there. Thank you again for listening. Have a good one. Please wear a mask, distance socially, and be safe to one another. Have a good one. Peace. If you think that episode kind of seemed a little weird, like a lot of stuff was cut out, that's because it was. I would say probably about 45 minutes was cut out of this episode, and it will most likely be headed to Asher Brothers Podcast, another podcast that I do with my brother that has nothing to do with NYPD Blue and is mostly made up of stuff cut out of NYPD Blue Balls. We're going to include in the next episode a lot of stuff that was cut out of here involving my dad and a procedure he didn't like very much. I can't possibly not put it out there because it's very, very funny, but it has almost nothing to do with NYPD Blue. So be on the lookout at Asher Brothers Podcast. It's on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and where you find NYPD Blue Balls. Thanks for listening again. Have a good one.